Welcome to the Business Trendsetter Podcast, where we talk about trends and how to grow your business. My name is Manny Turan.
And I'm Adam Hartung.
We are Spark Partners. We help you to grow your business by understanding trends and how to use them to grow your business. I'm here reporting from Grenoble, France, and just enjoying the beautiful Alps and the weather and the food and all these amazing things. And I thought today we'd talk about the idea of globalization, really what it means on a couple of different levels. Obviously, over the past number of years, there's been this big, massive trade war between the U.S. and China that's affected really a lot. But I also wanted to kind of bring it back home. And Adam, I know that you spent some time in France, having lived here for 3 years. And there's still this pretty solid connection between the West and as it pertains to technology. And I'm just in awe of how much I've been able to get done over the past 48 hours working remotely. And I'm not quite the digital nomad like many others are, but nonetheless, I've got technology here that allows me to communicate with you, Adam. I'm here, you know, eight time zones away and or nine, and we're able to make things happen. So give me your thoughts on the time you spent in maybe in Paris and other places you've lived. And then let's bring it back to this year, 2023, and tie it all together.
Well, first of all, I hate the phrase think outside the box, because I always tell people, how are you supposed to think outside the box? You're in the box. So the alternative is to get outside the box, then think. And what you're experiencing is one of those things, what I call getting outside the box. You get up every day, you work. We all have some office rendition. It could be in our house or wherever. But we have this place that we think of as where we work, and that becomes our box. And it's a location with a set of technology. Most of us look at the same apps every day when we get up, check the same email when we get up. We go through a routine. And what happens is that that actually creates biases and it creates blinders. And do you feel like you're outside the box?
Well, right now, if in my room, I do not. I am fully in the same box, right? I'm operating with my cell phone, my laptop. I've got connections. I've got apps that I'm communicating with, like Slack and Teams and all that. The only time I recognize that I'm outside the box is when I go downstairs and try to order some food, and the guy that I'm talking to doesn't speak any English. And so I've got to kind of mumble through broken French and Spanish and to kind of point to things. But otherwise, I'm in the box.
Well, let's talk about the food you eat. How is your dining experiences in there compared to, say, Tucson?
My mind has been blown. So this is my first time in France. So I've been all over Europe, but never France for that matter. And this morning I had the best omelet I've ever had in my life. It was a very simple omelet. It was just an omelet, mushrooms, and a little bit of cheese and parsley. And the parsley is very important, by the way, because that was the signature flavor that I really kept on tasting. But I was just blown away. It was super simple, but it just captured the essence of what I think we know as a French, which is, of course, they love food and wine and all that. So just blown away by the food. It's just amazing.
Well, one of the things is that even though the ingredients are the same, the way that a Frenchman would cook an omelet is different than we would, especially in the Southwest, where we basically fry an egg and put some ingredients in it. And the approach to cooking eggs is different in France. And so you're experiencing the same ingredients, but prepared and served a different way. And that's that whole outside the box kind of idea. It's like, well, why does this taste different? Well, it tastes different because it is prepared different. So even the same ingredients can come up with something different. And then think about your dinner last night, and how did that change versus or compare to eating in Tucson?
Well, I mean, last night I had a nice, delicious steak in some sauce, and the bottle of wine we had was just an amazing bottle of wine that I asked the waiter, and he said it's a regional bottle. I mean, I've had very expensive bottles of wine. I mean, nowhere near, because I know you're a connoisseur, but I've had $300 bottles of wine that are marginally better than what I had last night. That was $17.
Yeah.
You know, just blown away.
So again, back to the idea of get outside the box, then think. To me, it's not a meal, or not dinner, excuse me. It used to be true for lunch as well, but now it's not dinner if I don't have wine. I have wine pretty much every single dinner And it, of course, started because I did spend so much time in France. But one of the things that just galls me when I go to restaurants in America is that the wine list, you know, starts at, say, $60. There's a lot of places in bigger cities like San Francisco, Chicago, New York, even Las Vegas, where the, you know, I walked into restaurants where the cheapest wine on the wine list was $90 or $100. And it just, I'm like, I'm frazzled by this. I'm like, why are you taking a bottle of wine and tripling the value or quadrupling the cost of that wine before you put it onto the wine list? And you go to France, and like I see, they said, here's the wine. We don't necessarily go get all the wines that are the major top brands, but we get good wines, and then we serve it to you, you know, at about 125, 150% of what it cost us. It's a different model. It's a different approach. And
it is.
I've asked a lot of restaurateurs why they don't do that. I said, you'd sell a lot more wine if you offered it at a better price, you know, and even in the wine country in Napa, you just don't see people doing it. They get stuck in this model of thinking, oh, if it's alcohol, then it should be a high margin item, and therefore we're going to triple the cost. So I would say that even though you've only been there for a day and a half and your experiences have been mostly around dining, you're already, as you said, getting outside the box and starting to see the, how things are done differently. And I think that's good because there's an awful lot of people in business that I've talked to, and we'll say, well, you know, let's talk about insurance, health insurance, and how America provides health insurance and employer responsibility. And I'd say, you know, in other countries, it doesn't work that way. Like in France, Germany, the UK, the employer doesn't pay for health insurance. The government pays for health insurance. So there's a tax on everybody. The money goes in and the government pays for it. I said, think about what it'd be like in your business if you didn't have to provide your employees with health insurance, you know, if they got it automatically. And so that's the kind of thing, you know, say, well, that's outside the box. It's different. Interestingly, Americans tend to reject that almost universally. if you're in France, you go to Germany, and then you go to the UK or you go to Spain, and you see things different, and you'll say, oh, yeah, that's the way they do it in Spain, or that's the way they do it in Germany. And they might have some conversation about it, but they are aware of what's going on in all these other countries. And they will discuss, you know, pros and cons and why it's that way in a particular country. In America, what I've discovered is that when you get home and you start telling people, you know, they did this in France and they did it this way and I want to try it, they'll be like, no.
Right.
We don't want to do anything the way another country does. Do you feel that sometimes?
I do. And what was interesting, so last night I was with my colleague. We went to this little cornerside bar and we sat down, obviously very American. My buddy was wearing like a jean jacket, you know. So we're obviously very American, and there was a father and son to our left that was clearly very French, just the way they're dressed, they were speaking French. And we sat down about the same time. And what was interesting is we sat down and me and my colleague we ordered our food and the wine came and all that. And they immediately brought mustard, ketchup, Worcestershire, and Tabasco. And they set it down in front of our table, okay? And I'm just sitting there talking to the guy, and I look over, and the father and son next to us also ordered some food. They did not bring the ketchup, mustard, Worcestershire, and Tabasco. And interestingly enough, they had the exact same thing I did. So I had the steak and the French fries and a salad, and my buddy had also the steak, and they had the same thing. But automatically, they brought all the condiments because they saw, oh, these Americans, they love their condiments. And without even questioning, they brought the whole set of stuff, which was very interesting to me.
Yeah. So, and I think this is a great segue to be talking about globalization, because I had the good fortune early in my career to not only spend a lot of time in France, but also in the United Kingdom, and also quite a bit of time in Japan and Australia. And I visited and did working gigs, short-term working gigs in many, many other countries. And one of the things was that it would say, I'd start to pick up tricks, you know, like, well, look at how they did that, or look at how somebody, you know, accomplished this thing. And I would see differences, and I would see how they would get it done. And I would come back and I would talk to people in America about possibly doing things in a different way. But one thing I observed was that where somebody was, say, Chinese, and they went to France, they would tend to try to do business the French way very quickly. Right. So they would be speaking French very quickly. They would be trying to understand the mannerisms. They would effectively try to, you know, fit in. Americans have a tendency to go to a foreign country and try to make the foreign country do business the American way. And true. So it struck me throughout my career that the Americans always felt like in international relations, it was the opportunity to export Americanism to a foreign country, as opposed to saying, oh, how do we meet in the middle, or what could I learn from this, or how could I be advantaged by doing business a different way, by listening to the people that are across the table from me?
Yeah, very true. I've been in, I don't know, 40 or 50 countries, and it's always interesting how the American mindset travels with me as much as I try not to let it affect me. And I look at, being the capitalistic sort of American mindset of customer service, mm-hmm. and the way it operates so differently. So today we had a nice dinner. It was two of us, including the wine, and we each had the beef bourguignon. And I mean, it was amazing, right? It was $75 for the both of us, right? And then afterwards, they brought the bill, right? There's no place to tip, and tipping is not customary here in France. Right. But I felt compelled. So I took a 20 euro note and I folded it up. And as the guy was leaving, I said, hey, listen, I know this is not custom here, but I don't feel right unless I give you a tip. And I gave him the $20 bill, a 20 euro bill. And he looked at me and he says, I wish I lived in America. And he smiled and went. Right. But it was just interesting that I did the same thing. I brought my mindset that, you know, if I left without giving the guy a tip, I would feel weird. And I'm sure they get this a lot, but I just felt compelled to give him the 20 and say, enjoy. Thank you very much. And, he had a good spirit about it. He wasn't kind of didn't push back on it.
But same thing happens when people visit America. Because of my travels, I have a lot of friends from foreign countries, and we'll go out to eat and they'll say, Adam, let me, you're our host. Let me pick up the tab on this bill. And they'll get the bill and they'll be looking at it. And they're always shocked at the cost of the wine. But then the next thing will be, oh, that tip thing. How do you do that tip thing? I don't understand. Adam, please help me out with telling me how much I'm supposed to tip, because I just don't understand. And we are the country, the real only country in the world, in which we expect the servers to be paid nearly nothing and instead get their pay by this gratuity that's offered at the time of the service. So it's a very unusual situation, but we don't think of it as unusual, even though we're the odd man out. We're the only ones who do that. So as you think about this, maybe it can help us to start to relate to the fact of why we get so surprised by things that happen in international events. So even though, let's take, for example, the war in the Ukraine, it wasn't that many years ago, 2014, when Putin invaded Crimea, the other country slips my mind right now. It'll come to me in a minute. But anyway, when he made those invasions, Americans were like, so what? We didn't make a big deal out of it. At the time, Obama was president, and he didn't make a big deal out of it. And he more or less said, okay, fine, and Americans just, they really sort of ignored it. Where if you looked at the rest of the world, many of them said, this is horrible. This is Russia invading another country, taking over the country, annexing it, bringing his people in. And so they were really horrified. And they said, you know what? This will give Putin a sense that he could do more of this. Well, we just ignored it. We just pretended like it didn't happen. And so then whenever Putin looks like started saber rattling that he was going to go into the Ukraine, if you were watching the American news cycles, they were all saying, oh, he'll never do it. That would be so stupid of him. He knows that he would set off a war with Europe. He knows that it would cause all these problems. He's a much better tactician. He's a smart guy. He would never invade Ukraine. Whereas the people in the rest of the world were kind of like, this asshole is getting ready to walk in the door. He is going to bomb his way into that country. They fully knew that was where he was headed. That misrepresentation can really hurt us Americans when we start thinking about our business and thinking about globalization, because that's just a great example of Americans not paying attention to what's going on in the rest of the world and not starting to see things from other people's perspective. That unwillingness to take the mind out there and say, well, what does this look like to a German? What does this look like to a Frenchman? What does it look like to somebody in China or Taiwan or Thailand? That's really important if you're going to be doing business globally.
Yeah, I think it's really important to listen as well. Listen and watch. So if I think about my time in these different countries, and if I was just to have my, you know, my bold Western American mindset, it's really easy to bulldoze and just sort of make them operate the way you operate. But there's a certain beauty, a certain appreciation, and in a lot of ways, a bigger business opportunity if we just simply listen. I think that, for instance, Starbucks, they just recently moved into France just a few years ago, and they're having a hard time expanding. I've been here a day and a half, and I've been to a few cities, but I saw one Starbucks, and it was not full. It was not a lot happening there. And it's because of it just doesn't really fit the way that the French do business, the way the French enjoy coffee. And so I think that if we're good business people and we're doing things internationally, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to listen and really be culturally sensitive and just do the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I used to tell people when I'd come back from Europe, especially if I was in France or Italy and working, you know, you would typically meet somebody, the working day started around 10 and you would meet somebody at a cafe and, you know, you'd sit down outdoors. Now I was in Paris, I wasn't in Grenoble, where it's much colder, but you know, typically if the weather was decent at all, you'd sit outside. If it wasn't, you'd sit inside, you'd sit down, order up a cup of coffee. And then you would linger over it for an hour. And not eating anything, they're just sitting there for an hour, have a cup, maybe you have a second cup, maybe be there for 90 minutes and that's it. And then, you know, you would have a waiter and you'd typically pay the bill and then leave him like 50 cents as a tip. And you've taken a table for an entire 90 minutes, right, for the price of a cup of coffee or two. But that was where you really did a lot of the discussion and you kind of said, well, how are we trying to pave our meetings and how are we trying to pave our path forward? Done very, you know, colloquially in a very, you know, it was a third party setting as opposed to my office or their office. We're in a third party setting where we're able to have the discussions in a very open environment about what we're going to do. And then if we want to have private meetings, we've set it up. Then we go have that private meeting. That would happen later in the day. If you said, okay, now I think we've set the barriers, we're going to just talk about this issue, let's go back to our offices, let's get our information, let's maybe have some lunch, and then, you know, we'll meet again around 3:30, and we'll get into the details, you know, and have a conversation. And then we would stop working at, say, 6 or 6:30, right? And it was a whole different approach than how we do business in the USA. And a lot of times when I'd be doing something, I was working with corporations, I did a lot of work for the DuPont Corporation, that's where I was head of business development. And the lawyers would go with me to the meeting and, you know, they'd say, well, let's meet at 7 o'clock for breakfast. And I would say, well, you can go down there at 7 o'clock, but I'm sure as hell not bothered. And I said, you know, I'll meet you for breakfast. Then we'd go have breakfast at like 8:39. It's a very limited offering, you know, a roll, some eggs, you know, it's not like an American buffet line. And then we'd go for that 10 o'clock meeting. And then, you know, at noon, he's ready to go, you know, have a burger. And I'm like, no, we'll have a 90-minute lunch now. You and I will discuss what it is we're going to do. And then we'll take a break for a couple hours. Then we'll meet at 3:30. And the Americans will just be jumpy, you know, like, I can't believe we're working at this pace. And I'd say, but at the end of the day, we're going to get it all done. You know, and it's a different approach, right?
It's a different approach. And so today, earlier today, I had a phone call with a guy in Taiwan and some people in the U.S. as well, in Arizona. So we had a three-legged conversation. One guy in Taiwan, I'm in Grenoble, France, and the rest of the team is in Arizona. And I just think about how business is done today through the use of Fiverr and these other sort of gig economy sort of style working situations. And I mean, today we did not use AI of any sort, but it's not to say that AI isn't going to be prevalent. And I'm really curious, if you think about it, how is AI going to start playing in this global landscape where somebody in, we'll say Pakistan can use something like ChatGPT to create some content that will be culturally American, if you will, or culturally English or culturally whatever. I mean, it could be French, but they're in a different country. I mean, the whole idea of these trends is in some ways going to flatten the world, but I think it behooves the entrepreneur to be aware of these cultural sensitivities. And if they at least want to be successful. I mean, we just had Chinese New Year. And just imagine these countries that don't know what that even is, and they're trying to get things done. You've got to be sensitive to what's happening on the ground. I mean, people still have to, you know, they still want to have families and kids, and they still have their culture and language. And if you come in with your big bulldozer, you're not going to be very effective unless you've got some level of cultural awareness.
It's funny you said that, and it reminded me of how many Americans think Cinco de Mayo is celebrating the Mexican Revolution. It's not that at all, right? It's the 5th right. of May. It does celebrate a battle, but they Americans just have no idea. But that's okay. Let's go have Cinco de Mayo celebrations with no idea what it really means to the Mexican people. It's important because what we're talking about is that technology is moving forward quickly. So the Zoom technology that you use for a call, or if you use Riverside, or if you use Skype, whatever, could be FaceTime. All those technologies allow us to have this global communication at virtually no cost, because we hook onto the internet, so it's really not costing us anything. And at the same time, what we see happening is this move to nationalism in a lot of ways. So you see in the United States, for example, okay, why don't we shut down our borders? Let's not let any immigrants in. And at the same time, let's quit sourcing our chips from a foreign country. And so a lot of people in America are really happy. Oh, great, we're going to have a big federal spend. We're going to do a lot of infrastructure development. We're going to start to build chip fab plants and things like that in the United States. And okay, that's all right. I mean, I understand that that's good. But at the same time, what you're trying to say is we're going to go in the face of what is the technology that allows us to go global. As you said, a guy in Pakistan could be working on a marketing campaign, do it in his whatever language is preferred, and then turn it into English at the last minute, right? And again, he's crossing borders. If you look at a website like Fiverr, which allows us to source graphics work from people all over the world. I've had a lot of graphics work done by people in foreign countries because it was very inexpensive. They did what I wanted. And that flies in face of this idea of nationalism, right? So on the one hand, you have politicians that in a lot of ways are going the wrong direction. They're using things like Putin and the war. And Putin's war is a nationalistic effort. And instead of saying, that is absolutely the wrong direction for the world to head, they're saying, well, let's go in that same direction. So you get what they now call the hard right movement in Italy. Don't let any immigrants in. Let's try to be, it's Italy for Italy. We see the hard right party in Germany doing the same thing. And we see it in Israel. So there's a lot of countries which are trying to say, well, from a behavioral standpoint and a government standpoint and a political standpoint, we'd like to not be global. We would like to be nationalistic. We would like to keep other people out and define the world around whatever we think a Frenchman or an Italian or an American is. And then we'll define what that is, and we're going to try to preserve that and not evolve. We will not culturally adapt. Right. We will not culturally evolve. And that, again, is not going to help. I mean, if the technology is there, then the cat's out of the bag, Yeah. You're not going to get the genie back in the bottle. How many metaphors can I mix? The technology is there, and it's going to be used. And we need to accept that. And we need to start looking around and saying, okay, you know what? China is a smart place. There's a lot of really smart people in China. They have all the technology we have, and they are moving forward. What are we going to do? Stop? We're going to quit using AI? They're not going to quit using AI. So we have to start saying, how do we cooperate? And how do we try to, as business people, help move past these political structures? How do we try as business people to show the benefits of working internationally, to show the benefits of globalization across our workforce, across our supply chains, so that we can continue to try to be the best for all people and not somehow end up working backwards into the modern dark ages?
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a certain amount of learning as well, and really appreciation of the way that different cultures work. So I flew from Tucson to Denver, Denver to Frankfurt. Tucson to Denver was United. Denver to Frankfurt was Lufthansa. And I love Lufthansa. I mean, they're so efficient. I mean, you walk in that plane and you just feel the sense of order and the sense of just, I just can't describe it, right? I mean, I'm sure you've flown Lufthansa. I get in there, I sit down, and they just how they approach the customers is a different way. Very efficient, kind, but just to the point, and everything got served on time. The food was was impeccable, at least for this flight. And I just, as I was flying there and I was watching the flight attendants deal with people, I just had this sense of like, these damn Germans know what they're doing as far as efficiency. You know, I've driven German cars. I know you drive a German car. And, you know, just 60 years ago, we were in a battle with the Germans, right? And I've driven, I currently don't have a Japanese car, but I know a lot of people like Japanese cars and they make excellent cars. Same time, 60 years ago, we were at battle with these quote unquote, you know, these axis of evil and so forth. And here we are now doing business with them. Now they're our friends, now they're our allies. And, you know, who's going to understand that maybe in 60 years, the Chinese will be our best friends and there'll be some other force that are not our friends. So it's just amazing, at least the business side, how it has a certain level of being able to normalize the way that things are done in the world. Yeah, governments are going to do what government's going to do. But if we want to be smart business people, we've got to really have that eye on what's the best, the tool for the job. And it could be something from China. It could be something from, I mean, North Korea is its own different thing. But otherwise, the rest of the world has its benefit.
And it's been 80 years, but yeah, you're right. And, you know, what we can do as business people, we tend to want to say we don't want to talk about politics. And we tend to say we want to stay away from hot political issues. But reality is that the reason that Nixon said that we should not ignore the Chinese is because he wanted to do business with them. You know, he said, it's a billion people. Let's open that market up. Let's do business with those people. So business tends to lead international relations. You know, we're not kingdoms anymore. You know, and so in these interactions, it's the business people that are like the old commerce guys that used to get on the boats, right? And they would go to a foreign country and they'd come back with spices or rugs or something new and different and exotic and exciting. That that international trade was how we passed through technology and passed learning along, and that's not changed. And, you know, the people in North Korea, everyone that I've ever talked to that's had any insight to it, that's been there or been in South Korea and had opportunities to talk with folks about what's going on in North Korea, say, you know, it's not a good place to live. It's not fun. You know, the people there are having a difficult time. And they all say that the way we'll get around that would be eventually if the leader of North Korea would allow trade, if he would allow trade to happen. Right now, the trade is between North Korea and China. So they have trade. But, you know, if the United States and democracies had trade, they would probably get a different point of view. And at the same time, though, we need to be respectful about what is going on in China. The Chinese government has changed dramatically since the days of Tiananmen Square. We now have leadership in China that is far more nationalistic. They have saber-rattled quite a bit about trying to take over Taiwan. And again, as business people, we should be trying to say to everybody, hey, that's not a good idea. Don't follow the direction Putin's going. It's not helping Putin at all. It's not helping the Russian people that he's invading the Ukraine. It's not just sanctions. It's that inability to get technology. It's the inability for people to work in technology jobs because they can't export their learning and their work out of Russia. So the nationalism that's caused that war is not just, it's bad for the people and it's bad on both sides and it's bad for the business. And as business people, we should be speaking up about that. And we should be speaking up to say, look, you know, we want to do business in these foreign countries. We want to be able to export our goods and import supply chain items. And I think often we don't do enough of that. We try to sit back. And if we leave it in the hands of politicians in the United States, that means you're leaving it in the hands of lawyers. And honestly, I've had seen a lot of really bad business deals happen and a lot of bad things happen because of the bias that lawyers bring when they come into anything. The world's a negotiation to a lawyer, and it's one set of rules versus another, and it's a set of arguments. And how do we make our arguments? That's not, I would say, not universally the way we as Americans like to be or the way we do business. So as business people, we have a voice, and we should be exercising that voice to try to tamp down these nationalistic efforts and get people to understand the benefits of getting outside the box and giving us a new opportunity to learn.
Agreed. Well, here in the next few minutes of this podcast, I'd like to summarize maybe a handful of things that a business owner can do today in order to grow their business in light of globalization. So I'll give a few and then you can give, you know, the rest or whatever. And I think that, you know, you mentioned something, bias is a big deal. You know, we see things with our American eyes. And I know we've got listeners and viewers in other countries too. So, you know, be it your English eyes or your French eyes, whatever. So I think it's important that we try to mitigate that by just listening to other other cultures and seeing how you can actually play out. And then the second thing I'll say before I toss it to you is, you know, this idea of using technology as a bit of a common denominator between cultures, between lands, between the way we do business. And I think it's important to leverage AI and these other things that are in existence in order to advance your business forward.
Yeah, and I would encourage everyone to visit foreign countries. I truly would. You know, this year, I'm doing some projects up in Vancouver, Canada. And, you know, there's a lot of people who think of Canada as like the 51st state. And not realizing, I'm sorry, it's a completely different country. And they do things entirely different ways. And you need to be respectful of that whenever you're doing business in Canada. But very few Americans, I'm struck at how many have never visited Canada nor ever visited Mexico. Right. And that's not a hard trip to make, but yet very few Americans do it. And they should. They should at least get a sense of that. It's, you know, it's not difficult to get on a plane and go to Peru or go to Bolivia or to go to Brazil. These are not hard flights. And if you want to put a little more effort into it, there's Europe, but then there's also Asia. And then I encourage people to, you know, I've been to Japan, I've been to the Philippines, I've been to many countries in Asia, including and then down to Australia as well. It's not just a young man's game to get out and do this. Meet people, go around the world and go spend some time and see how business gets done. Because once you get outside the box, you will think up new ideas that can be very, very, very beneficial to growing your business.
Absolutely. And I think the last thing I'll say before I give it to you, Adam, to close out is, you know, if you think about some of these large companies like Google and Apple and Tesla and all that, they all have a presence, a global presence, irrespective of, you know, either being founded or operating out of the United States. I mean, today during my walk outside of Grenoble, I saw so many Teslas. It was just crazy for a small little, you know, French village up in the Alps. I was surprised of how many Teslas I saw. And I thought to myself, they must be putting a hell of an effort to take the Teslas and really make it into a de facto electric car here in France. So what other thoughts do you have before we close out?
Well, certainly they have to react because they were getting most of their gasoline from Russia, most of crude oil, and global climate change, all kinds of factors they're taking much more seriously than we do in the United States. And they are moving much more quickly towards electrification, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, much more quickly towards electric cars. And again, international business is a good thing. Globalization is a good thing. If the better we do that, the harder we work at that, the more we listen, as you said, the less likely we'll have wars. And I hope our business community is excited about that opportunity.
Very well said, Adam. With that, I bid you farewell from Grenoble, France, and we'll talk to you next week.
Au revoir.
Cheers.